from the room.
Ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who are here for the affirmation meeting, would you please move to the center section so that our speakers can talk directly with you? Again, if you are here for the affirmation of commitments, please move to the center section. Thank you so much.
Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. We're about to begin. My name is Peter Dengate Thrush. I'm the chairman of the board of ICANN, and my co-presenter today is Ambassador Yanis Karklins, chairman of the Government Advisory Committee. What we propose to do is, first of all, take you through a set of slides which explain some of the history and the processes and where we are. And then we'll move forward into a discussion with the community about next steps. Where do we go to from here to make these reviews the success that we require them to be? One of you could just rotate that for me slightly so I can see that. Thank you. Yes. Ladies and gentlemen in the room, we also have about 55, possibly now 60 people in the online room, and we will be making sure that they are also participating at the same time as we physically present are. So we'll have to work in relation to taking questions. Let me introduce Rob Hogarth, who's the Senior Policy Director at ICANN, who is manning the chat room and the online connectivity. So we'll be asking Rob occasionally to come forward with questions from that. So looking at the slide, we're going to work through the affirmation requirements themselves, have a brief discussion about the processes we've employed to date. We'll talk about applications for review team membership, some timelines, and we'll be focusing today on the first of the reviews, the accountability and transparency review. This is a major step for us in relation to achieving or seeking, and I'm not sure we'll ever achieve it, much greater transparency and accountability. You'll recall that much of this work came out of the work done in terms of global consultation by ICANN through the President's Strategy Committee with the community under the heading Improving Institutional Confidence. And one of the major themes that came from that, which is reflected in the final report of the President's Strategy Committee, is the need for improving transparency and for accountability. Much of that work has moved into the affirmation of commitments, and we're now testing the transparency and accountability section. As you probably know, we're looking at reviews to be performed by teams composed of volunteer members of our community, some independent experts, and some designated members set out in the affirmation of commitment itself. An important point to note is that the board and staff are not involved in performing these reviews. Now, let's just put that in the right context. The affirmation of commitments is a major contract or agreement between ICANN and the United States government, and the board is responsible for making sure that its commitments under the affirmation of commitments are met. So the board is paying close attention to the performance of these and also to the subject matters that are actually being examined. Those were identified by the President's Strategy Committee as areas needing work, and so the board is developing a program to make sure that the work gets done so that when it is reviewed, it meets the appropriate standards. Just a quick reminder, there are actually four reviews: accountability and transparency, security, stability, resilience, consumer trust and choice, and who is. And today we're focusing on just the first one. There's some existing structure suggested or required, rather, by the affirmation of commitments. Looking just at the transparency and accountability one on the left, you see that it involves, as named members, the chairman of the GAC, the board chair, a representative from the US Department of Commerce, representatives of the relevant SOs, and some independent experts. So that's what the affirmation of commitments prescribes as being the composition of the team. And in the bottom box, you'll see that the GAC chair and the board chair are responsible for selecting that team. Now, we've had a process where a very good, in my opinion, set of proposals was put together by our Director of Reviews, Marco Lorenzini, who's here. Marco, would you stand up? I think it's appropriate that we acknowledge the excellent work that went into the proposals that were published. Responding to that were 32 public comments that raised in general issues under these headings, and we may come back to some of these when we discuss next steps. Comments about the methodology to be adopted, the timeline, the size and composition, the voting rights of Yanis and I, the independence of the review teams, the support that would be provided those teams, should the ICANN staff be supporting this, or should something independent be arrived at? And when we talk about the public interest, what do we mean? So where are we? Well, we've had a discussion paper. It's gone out. We have no plans to rewrite that. The comments that came in raised issues around it. The review teams are going to use that original proposal and the public comments for their purposes. The trend seems reasonably clear that the review teams themselves will decide their methodologies. They will select what is appropriate, depending on each of the reviews, as necessary by way of tools and indications. They will decide with assistance in relation to what kind of staffing they require, what data analysis they're going to perform, and so on. We've had a substantial coordination with the support organisations and the advisory committees in relation to memberships, because that's where the memberships need to come from. Considerable time pressure imposed on the entire review. It has to be completed, so we had to start quickly. We've extended the time as a result of requests from the community. We've got in candidates. We're in the process now of processing their applications. And as of last night, when the period for nomination or application closed, this was the breakdown of candidates. 24 have applied. They come, as you can see, from the at-large, the CCNSO, the Government Advisory Committee, and the GNSO. If you're interested, a further breakdown shows them by country: Europe, Asia Pacific, Latin America, North America, and Africa. Bottom right-hand corner, you see the gender breakdown: five women and 19 men. Further discussion then about the timeline. I don't think we need to have that. We now are in the process of establishing the review teams, and with luck, we will have that. If Yanis and I can carry on the cooperation that we've started in the same way, we hope to have that to be announced at the board meeting on Friday. So that brings us up to date, and we now come to you for community discussion and questions about next steps. So I'll ask Yanis then to lead us in the discussion. If you want to say anything else about the process to date, Yanis, do. Next steps.
Yeah, no, thank you, Peter. I wanted maybe to come back a little bit and to answer to some criticism that I heard from different quarters on a couple of issues during the process, and namely that the review methodology and the call for applications at one point went in parallel. And it was the call for applications was perceived as an attempt to prejudge the outcome of public consultations on draft methodology. And I must tell you that it has never been intended to prejudge anything in public comments on proposed methodology. Rather than taking into account the time constraints, we felt that it would be useful to publish this call for volunteers as early as we could, and if you read very carefully the text of this call for proposals, it did not allude neither to size of the team, nor composition of the team, nor proportions between different constituents of the team. So this was done intentionally, simply to speed up the process. And the process now showed that supporting organizations, advisory committees, needed more time to think through and to propose names for these review teams. I think, Peter, it would be useful to, before the launch, the debate and answering, collecting comments and questions, to say that during the comment period, it became abundantly clear that the proposed size of the team, 6 to 8 members for accountability and transparency team, is far too little. And we have had several discussions with Peter, and we're looking in the range of 12 to 15 members for this team. And we would be very willing to hear your comments, whether you think that this is the right size and right these are right numbers.
Let me give you an insight into the dynamics of our discussion. I'm the mean one because every person we add to the team is going to make a significant impact to the budget. We're going to have to move these people around. We're going to have to provide them with services. I also share the view in the staff paper that a smaller team is going to be more efficient. And Yanis and I are working through those issues. Obviously, greater geodiversity, gender diversity, and skills is a countervailing factor. Where we get the balance between that, you know, we haven't yet decided, but we will. The other thing that may affect that, of course, is the skill sets of the team members themselves, and we've only just started being able to look at that now that the application process is closed. So that's a very live debate between Yanis and I at the moment, and I suppose it would be quite good to hear from the people online, if there is somebody, Rob, or from the floor, whether there's some further input. And please, if you've already made a public comment, don't repeat it. We have read the public comments, and we understand the point. We're looking for taking that issue a bit further. Rob, somebody online?
Yes, and I'd quickly observe, Peter, that we pretty much have an even distribution. We have about 75 people here in person and 77 people online right now. Eric Bruner-Williams asks, has the issue of whether or not the NomCom makes appointments been resolved? And if so, what is the resolution of the question?
Yeah, I think that there isn't a problem. The call for volunteers was for everybody, and until yesterday, everybody could make nominations. As we see today, NomCom hasn't done it. And therefore, there will not be NomCom representative in the team.
Just a quick gloss on that. The actual affirmation calls for members of the volunteer community coming through from the ACs and the SOs, and the NomCom is neither an AC or an SO. So there's a short technical response. Somebody from the floor.
Thank you. As there is a big trouble with people to take the notes and speaking in English and in French, I will do it in English, importantly. Sébastien Bachelet from France, and I'm speaking on my own behalf. I have one question. Is the pie of the candidate for this review team, you put that they are from ALAC, GNSO, CCNSO, is it that they are willing to be put by those groups, or is it they are already supported by those groups? Because I think it's a different issue, because you can have somebody claiming that they want to be supported, or if they are supported, it's something different. The other point I want to make, it's a little procedural question, that now you think that it's not 8, but it must be 12 or 15. Don't you think that it could change the position of some people to be candidates? Thank you very much.
Sébastien, thank you for those two questions. Let me ask Marco to respond in relation to the mechanics of team of member applications and authentications.
So the deadline has expired yesterday night at midnight UTC. So at this stage, out of those 24 candidatures, only three have been supported. They are the three that have been supported immediately by the GAC. So all the other candidatures have been transmitted to the relevant supporting organizations and advisory committees, and they have until the 17th of March to decide whether they want to endorse those candidatures.
Thank you, Marco.
Answering Sebastian's second question, as I said earlier, when we made a call for nominations, we never alluded to potential number, because it was felt that it was, would be community who should, let's say, define the size of the team. The comment period on draft methodology ended 17th February. And in these comments, it was absolutely clear that the team would be not, as suggested, 6 to 8, but rather bigger. Numbers were mentioned went up to 30. So therefore, I don't think that if initial proposal would say 12, 15, we would have more candidates. So it is just a pure speculation.
Rob, should we go to the online room? Nothing right now. Let's come to you, sir.
Alan Greenberg. It's encouraging to hear that in light of the various comments, you have reconsidered the size of the team. It would be incredibly useful to the various ACs and SOs to know how many members they will have on the team prior to their making the selection. Are we likely to have that information?
Sorry. How many from each SO?
Well, the original proposal called for instance, one GNSO rep. If you're increasing the size of the overall team, presumably some of those will go from one to some higher number. It would be good to know what that number is prior to us submitting our endorsements.
Why? We're going to be selecting people, not slots.
Because we will have to select amongst people, and our results may well be different if we know we're only going to have one, or if we know we will have two, for instance.
I think we have a misunderstanding. We've asked for nominations. We're not going to be looking at the people. We're not going to be...
No.
We can come back to that one.
Can I help?
Yes, please.
Okay, so, Chris Desmain, I think the point is this, and perhaps the easiest example is the... well, actually, the ALAC will do as an example. So there are 8 people who have put their names forward. You are now asking, as I understand it, the ALAC to endorse or otherwise those 8, some or all of those 8 people. Now, if the ALAC knows that you only require one person, they might endorse 2 or 3. And if they know that you require 2 or 3, they might endorse 4 or 5. So what you're actually asking them to do is to endorse a number of those. They may decide, for example, only to endorse 2. Then what?
I don't understand the game playing. We want you to endorse all of the candidates. Why would you not endorse all of the candidates coming forward from your group?
Well, in many cases, in excess of 50%. The members who are seeking endorsement from the At-Large Advisory Committee are unknown to us in any way, shape or form beyond us receiving their CVs and letters when Marco has sent them to us. So we're going to be going through a process where we are endorsing people based on a set of criteria that we as internal ACs have to develop and defend to our communities. Now, if we're getting one person... then that makes a vastly different checklist and prioritisation for our endorsement process. There is no system that we had in place to say anyone of the billions of people who wish to put in their bid to be appointed and they would like to represent at large. There was no pre-existing system for us to have that done. Therefore, the information on 1 or 2
is
very important. And that really was my point.
My misunderstanding, we just assumed that you would relatively easily know who all of your community members were and be able to provide an authentication for all of them straight away. So thank you for the question. I understand. Rob, online? No, let's go to Chris.
I just want to make one point. The chair of the GNSO, me as chair of the CCNSO and the chair of the ALAC have actually written formally to you. To raise a number of points, only one of which I'd like to address now, and that is that each of us has our own extremely well-worn and extremely difficultly put together process by which we find people to do stuff. And to have imposed upon us a completely different methodology which totally negates, in our case, for example, our bylaws, this doesn't work for us. There are many reasons why you only have one nomination from the CCNSO, but the main reasons, one of those reasons is because we could not do what needed to be done in the process that you put forward. We can sit down on Wednesday and say, do we endorse that person? Not a problem. But that's not the point. The point is that we have well-worn regional geographic methodologies that we have in place, and this process has effectively abrogated all of those.
Thank you, Chris. Perfectly understand, because I'm wearing the same hat as you do for the GAC. And I have exactly the same concern to ensure all the balances, geographic, gender, and so on. But the group itself also has to carry the same balances. And this is a little bit a sort of cooperative approach, if you want, to get to the right composition which ensures all balances. I would hate, for instance, to see that all SOs, ACs endorse two or three males coming from developed countries.
Sure.
So, but somebody needs to take this responsibility and to see that these balances are in place in the entire group from one side and from other side, to see whether skills of the people in the group as a group corresponds to the task this group is supposed to do. So, and I understand from the affirmation of commitment that is task of selectors. And then our choice will be put for public comments. And that is how we understand endorsement by the SOs, ACs, the list. This is according to affirmation of commitments. The list will be a place for public comments. And when it will be endorsed, then it will be final.
Okay, now, one more thing. I don't want to take this too much further because there's not much to be achieved by it. Thank you. I acknowledge that. The only point I would make is that the affirmation of commitment doesn't provide any of the detail. You can make some assumptions, and I accept that. And one of those assumptions is quite clearly that the selectors select. I accept. But I think there is therefore a clear misunderstanding, if you can have such a thing. We think that we are supposed to support, endorse, whatever, representatives of our SO or AC to be part of this review. And we think it's our job, because we do it all the time, to work out regional balances and gender balances and the skill set. It's no different in some respects to our decision about who we put on the board. We look at a whole heap of things and make our decision. And we're more than capable of doing that, and we would have been more than capable of doing that within the very tight time frame had we been asked.
Thanks, Chris. Just two quick responses. I think there is a distinction between representatives and that go through your standard process and this, which has been treated as an authentication process of volunteers. So I think we need to clarify which we all want, which is going to be the best for us. And the second point is there's a hell of a lot of these reviews and they're going to be coming up all the time. So we thank you for helping us get this one right. Let's try and get it right for the next ones. Rob, somebody online?
Thank you, Jamie. I actually have two questions that are relatively quick, so I'll read them in order and you guys can address them. Christina Rosette asks, where other than the ICANN website was the call for volunteers published? I've been asked and don't know the answer. Thanks. The second is from Jeff. Is there a list of all those that volunteered?
Well, let's turn to Marco to answer both those questions. Where was the call officially published? I know it was unofficially distributed by lots of people.
Yeah, it was published on our website.
Thank you. And Jeff's question, are we going to publish the names of all of the applicants?
I think this is the intention. We announced it already in the call for volunteer applicants that all applications will be published, complete, including the letter of motivation and the curriculum vitae. And in the case of GNSO, as GNSO requires further details, we can publish also those further details.
Thank you. Let's go this side. Steve.
Thank you, Peter. Jonas. You mentioned earlier that you were considering some flexibility at increasing the size of that first team, and I think that makes sense. So I assume by that that you read flexibility in the affirmation of commitments with regard to the enumerated section of who and from each SO and AC and representatives. You indicated that you were going to try to pay attention to diversity and balance, but my particular question is the kind of balance we want to maintain. For instance, if we were to add another GAC or governmental rep to the first team, would we also add one more for each of the SOs and ACs as the affirmation agreement calls for?
There is no flexibility in relation to what's enumerated in the AOC, but there is flexibility between Yanis and I in arriving at our selections. I'm not sure that we would do it on a strict pro rata basis. It depends on, at this stage for me personally, it's going to depend on the skill sets that are coming through from the volunteers.
All right. May I ask a follow-up then? Not with respect to the team size, but I think I heard earlier that the comments that came in from many of us on, for instance, I did some expansion of defining public interest and tried to suggest some definitions for that. I think you said that those comments will be passed along to the review team for them to deal with, for them to decide whether and how to regard those as they come up with their terms of reference. But the public interest definition that several of us focused on is more than just the first team. Global public interest shows up on paragraph 4 of the AOC long before we get into the four review teams. So it's a term that will affect the work of all the teams. And so shouldn't we try to deal with a lot of our suggestions at defining public interest before the first team starts rather than letting the first team sort of pave the way?
Do you have a suggestion on the process, how this discussion could be carried out, and what would be the weight of that discussion? Yeah, and the timeline.
Not wanting to delay in any way the work of the first team, here's one idea. Since public interest is a cross-cutting is what we say all the time at IGF, right? It's a cross-cutting theme across all the review teams. Let's in parallel, while they're beginning their terms of reference on team one, let's in parallel launch a period where we try to define for ICANN, for all teams, what we think global public interest means. There was a lively debate on that in the comments that came in, and surprisingly, a few people even agreed with me. So I think we could potentially do that in parallel and then feed that into that first team so it comes from community-wide.
Would the kind of cross-constituency working group, an ad hoc working group, would be the solution?
I think that's the usual solution around here, so I suppose so.
Aside. Thank you.
Well, this is Jamie Wagner. I would like to your considerations about the value of endorsement by the SOs. As I understood from Yanis' explanation, there will be a pre-endorsement period and a post-endorsement period after the selectors decide. But I would like your comments on the pre-endorsement period. Will the names put by the SOs be, the selectors will choose them, or they will not count on this pre-endorsement?
No, I understand that pre-endorsement is done only by the GAC, that other constituencies haven't had followed this endorsement procedure before the nominations. All these names which have been put forward, they are individuals who are acting, who have put forward those names and indicating that they would represent that and that constituency. So in the GAC, we adopted a method of non-objection when information was passed on to the email address indicated in the call. It was copied also on the GAC mailing list, and nobody objected, and automatically the person or the name or candidate has been endorsed. So whether all GAC-endorsed candidates will be in the review team, I don't know. That's a subject of our discussion and the selection process. But and after that, according to AOC, we will publish that for public comments, our proposal and endorsement for the community, for the SOs and ACs.
I'm asking for the, well, GNSO also has put on a process of pre-endorsement and selection of names to endorse, and I think my question is how is with respect to GNSO, how will the list be considered by selectors?
With utmost care and consideration. So, you see, this is slightly, we cannot say how you will be running. So we will be talking tonight, we will be having debate, we will take all applications, we will read them carefully, and so as a result we will come up with a proposal. I don't know what chemistry will be. Maybe we will not come up with a proposal tonight. Maybe we will sort of punch each other in the face without agreement. You know, it's hard to say. Sorry, we cannot answer. At least I cannot answer that question.
Thanks for the sincerity.
What I can add to this is I think there was a very good, one of the public comments said, please would we explain the selection thinking? And I think we should try and do that very clearly so that we won't just announce winners and losers. What I hope we will be able to do is explain why the people who have been selected and why the people who haven't. So perhaps that may be a time to pick up your point.
It still doesn't answer my question of the value of the pre-endorsement by the GNSO, at least. We are doing a job. We are taking hours. And I didn't see in your answer the kind of consideration that will be done to this pre-endorsement by the GNSO, at least.
Okay. Can I just have an indication about the topics that you want to talk about? Are we still on size and composition and method of selection?
Yes.
Or Bill, have you got a new topic?
Other things as well.
Your second? Same topic?
Still on the same topic.
New topic.
Okay. So it looks like we're coming to an end of this one, which is good. Cheryl.
In fact, the first point, I hope to maybe clarify what the speaker before me was asking. As I interpreted his question to you, the selectors, I'll use the ALAC as an example, though. With our eight names, if we endorse six of them, are you only going to consider the six endorsed candidates or not? And I think that's the difference of our terminology, pre-endorsement, and the job you do once the endorsed candidates come up. So Marco's instructions to us was that the consideration would be given to those people from the ALAC world who were given at-large advisory committee endorsement. That is what we have been working on the assumption of. Now, I'd like to know, first of all, is that a correct assumption?
Yes.
Thank you. One thing down. Great. The next question, and again, it might be unique to the at-large advisory committee part of that pie chart. We may be the only group that's faced with quite literally not knowing who from the wider at-large, not the ALAC, not known to us, Joe, Fred, Mary in the street, and 50% of them are exactly that, unknown to us people, wishing to volunteer. This is really important. We would like to know how we leverage off these excellent skill sets that they have without insulting or anything else. If we just endorse half of them, perhaps only the ones that are known to us, what messages we have to do with the messages that sends to that community, the potential resource on the community. So from what you were saying earlier,
well,
Peter...
Can I just cut you? That's an ALAC issue.
I understand.
I'm not sure that we can help you with that.
Well, you can by answering the next question, and that is it... Did I hear you correctly that there was an assumption that we would pro forma endorse by looking at the applicants, all of those who, in our case, say they would like to represent ALAC?
That would be my assumption until you told me that it was difficult.
Okay. Well, it's just we need to know that when we sit in session tomorrow to do these endorsements. Thank you.
Following on to what Cheryl said,
I was also reacting to the statement that the assumption was we would endorse everyone. And I just want to make it well understood. We have candidates who explicitly said, I've always wanted to get involved with ICANN. This seems like a good chance. Given that these people are supposed to be representatives of us, which the dictionary definition says can speak on our behalf, and we don't know the rules of the working group yet, which may require complete secrecy, to take someone who's, you know, they'd like to get involved in ICANN and say, you're now our representative and can speak on our behalf, we're not really eager to do that. So I just want to make sure you understand the situation we're dealing with.
I do, and I'm grateful because I'd been operating under a reasonably different set of assumptions, that the words members of the volunteer community, which is what the affirmation talked about, means people who are known as existing members of the community. But your suggestion is they can be absolutely brand new, and as soon as they volunteer, they become members of the volunteer community.
We have several people who have never participated in ICANN whatsoever.
So that raises the point.
In our list.
Yeah. At what point do they become eligible by being members of the volunteer community? So these are things we need to work through.
Just wanted to do a level set of what's happening.
Maybe now I understood the meaning of the question, two questions before. So indeed, I noticed that in the list what Marco was preparing, but this was the first list about 10 days ago, there was indication of the choice of GNSO. And that's kind of pre-endorsement, if you wish, using the same terminology. But I would like to say, for me, that is very valuable, and I will consider those indications, and that would be additional consideration which I will take into account.
Bill.
Bill Drake from the GNSO. One comment and then two questions. The comment would be, I would support this idea of a working group on public interest and then trying to figure out what that means. I think it would actually be very useful. I'm not as confident, perhaps, that we would be able to solve that really, really quickly. I think that would take a few months, to be quite honest, because it's a big conceptual point, but I think it's an important one for us to tackle. I just wanted to echo what people were saying from the CCNSO and also ALAC. The GNSO, we elaborated this whole mechanism based on our understanding of the communication we were getting about how to proceed that required us to decide who we were going to put forward, and it wasn't going to be all of them. So we've decided to nominate up to 6 names to give to you, and we have 10 applicants. Our assumption then is that the 4 that are not, that don't pass muster within the council, we're not giving you those names. That is okay with you, right? Just to be sure. Okay, that's important to know, because we have to do this tomorrow starting. The other point I wanted to raise was we just had a lunch meeting with the CCNSO. The call for applications sort of was written in a way that invited applications for all the different review teams at the same time. So you've got a number of people who wrote in and said, I'm actually interested in the who is, which is going to be done much later. And we had to basically put those aside and say, okay, we're only going to focus on the ones there for accountability and transparency right now. You don't have in the pool altogether now sufficient bodies to do the other review teams. And also, there's going to be the need for some specific skill sets. So I just want to make clear, it is your intention, I hope, to do another call specific to each of the new rounds, right?
Yes.
Okay. Because we were just not clear on whether that was happening. Or that we were interpreting it that way, but we didn't know.
All right, we can be clear about that. There'll be further calls as we start getting on to the other reviews. Okay. Mr. Zook.
Yes, hello. Jonathan Zook from the Association for Competitive Technology. I think part of the challenge associated with the selection of these teams is that we may be giving them too much responsibility. I'm a little bit concerned that the process that's been put in place in a rather hurried way sort of turns organizational management on its head, and that what we really need to do is not put them in a position of defining the metrics and for review that should be part of the objectives for these teams, et cetera, that are going to be reviewed up front. I think it's really important for the community to define in each of these cases what the metrics and measures for success are so that we instead make the process that these review teams have to go through a much more straightforward process than actually retroactively deciding what should have been the management objectives of the teams being reviewed. That's the real danger that I see here, is that it's like, you know, how long will the period be that these things are reviewed? It's sort of like, will they manage to the test then afterward, you know, like teaching for the standardized tests? Because once we've announced the criteria, that'll then become the management objectives of the organizations being reviewed. I think this is really putting the cart before the horse, and we need to get back to basics and define those metrics before those review teams are put in place and before they're given that mandate.
You know, let me maybe tell you how I see the timetable and the further tasks, which are described already in the methodology. So once the team is constituted, and I hope that will be by end of March, so the first task of the team would be decide on or start discussions on terms of reference and performance metrics. And this may take maybe a month, and the draft terms of reference and performance metrics will be published for community review for 45 days. And it is expected that, according to current timetable, that these terms of reference and performance metrics will be endorsed or adopted finally, whether right before Brussels meeting or around Brussels meeting when team will meet in person, but after extensive public comment period and engagement with community. So that is the first fundamental work of the team, engage community to define those performance metrics. And these performance metrics, in my view, do not determine the work of organization. Organization is working. Organization has its own operational plans, or strategic plan, and the evaluation team will be looking into specific questions related to accountability, transparency in this case, and then in other questions for other teams. So, but I can assure you that intention is that this is a community effort to define performance metrics or questions what we want to answer.
I guess in any other organization, if you had a bonus discussion with your boss coming up at the end of the year and then sometime around October, an outside review team came in and was going to define what it is that the terms on which you would get your bonus, I think you'd be a little bit disappointed as an employee rather than having the previous January being told what are the measures that are going to be used to define your bonus. So the organization is going to be judged without objectives having been set initially, and I think that that's a really backward way to...
Jonathan, can I agree? And I don't think we've got this quite tied down yet. You and I have agreed before in public that what gets measured gets done. We've also agreed that he who defines the argument usually wins it. So there's a great deal of power involved in setting that. And I'm concerned about sending off a review team with only the prescriptions from the affirmation of commitments as what they go to study as their guide. On the other hand, we're dealing with hopefully reasonable people. And the countervailing argument is that if we set that up too tightly in advance, we could be accused of capture of the process by the board and staff who set that. So somewhere in the middle there, we have to get a community way of setting the metrics and then the team applying them. And what Yanis has outlined is our currently best shot at that. Let's get the team together and let's have them run that process. Let's have them put up what they think the metrics are and let's have you come back and tell them whether they've got it right before they start the process. So I'm pushing back a little that it's going to be assessing the bonus in October. They should be setting the metrics in April.
So will they only be judged? Will the organization only be judged from April until January? What will be the terms of that judgment?
Accountability and transparency issue is on the agenda of ICANN at least for 2 years, if I'm not mistaken. President's Strategy Committee looked. We had a number of discussions about that. There has been extensive public comment period on the issue of accountability and transparency of ICANN. And if I'm not mistaken, board passed a resolution on that. So for this particular case, I think there is already something to measure if there is a board resolution.
I don't think any of those things have resulted in any objective
I agree, and it worries me. So we'll try and get this right. Stefan. Rob, sorry, let's go back to the online room.
I'd like to recognize two things real quickly, Peter. You're at your hour, but you did start late. You have two folks in line here. I only have one comment or statement to read from the remote chat, so maybe one or two more people who want to get in line here would be the cutoff. And I'm sorry, I just lost my...
Just while you're looking, let me confirm, we will go at least till 10 past. The next session in here doesn't start till 3:30, I understand.
Great. Christina Rosette submitted an additional comment. She said, thanks very much for answering my question. I suggest that for the other review teams, I can publish the call in other media that are likely to reach potential volunteers with expertise relevant to those RTs. It may be the case that the media sources being used for the new GTLD communications plan could be used for this purpose too.
Thank you. Remember, we're looking for the requirement is for members of the community. So advertising to the world may amount to overkill. Stefan.
Thank you very much. Stefan van Gelder, Registrar Stakeholder Group. I don't want to labour the points that have been made by my fellow GNSO councillors. I just want to make sure that you understand, having heard you say that this is a first shot at the process and it's ongoing and there will be other reviews and other processes of this kind, to make sure that you are aware of how challenging it's been and it is proving for us within our own groups to come to through our processes, which are actually much longer than the time we've been afforded here, to be able to endorse some of the candidates that we've had put forward. So I would urge you to take that into account in future. Just speaking for the registrars, for example, we normally take a few more days than have been afforded to us to come to a vote, bring our members together and be able to coalesce around a vote and be able to produce a result for the council. So that's proving a challenge for us.
Stefan, let me on the record thank the GNSO for the work that you've done in this area at what is an enormously busy time for you in lots of other ways. So that has not gone unnoticed. So thank you for that. And without breaching the confidentiality of the negotiations that went into signing the affirmation of commitments, let me assure you that the difficulties imposed by this timeline were made very clear to all parties to that negotiation.
Thank you.
I think Aisha was there before me.
I'd hate to come. Yes, carry on.
Thank you. Aisha Hassan from the International Chamber of Commerce. First of all, for those who don't know, ICC's membership spans across many of the constituencies that are commercial interest constituencies. So my broader membership is very interested in this first review, and they're very interested in all of the subsequent reviews. I'd first like to just pick up on the comment that Christina made and a couple of the other improvements. I hope that at some point we'll have a chance to take stock of how this one went. It had to be rushed in certain ways on many elements of the process and improve for the next reviews. That said, at this stage, you'll have a very challenging situation to deal with in terms of selecting. And I'd like to make a comment about overall composition, balance, and diversity elements. From our perspective, the broader business interests and expertise on the review panels can come in many shapes and forms. I think that when we look at a CV, we don't necessarily see everything about the expertise of a single individual. So we're hoping that in the selection process, there'll be due consideration given to how many of the GNSO representatives will add benefit to this panel's work. From a broader business perspective, we certainly hope that a broader business understanding will emerge from the candidates that are considered and selected. That said, we also recognize that there's going to be a real challenge in meeting all of the diversity elements. And at this stage, given that things were rushed and there may not be the full diversity of every kind in the pool that you're going to select from, we would hope that expertise in carrying out this review panel's very important work is given priority consideration, and we may see that compromise has to be taken on some of the elements of diversity that one would hope for in the future. That said, I thank you for the confirmation that we are going to see the list of your selections, and then we'll have a chance to comment on it. So my question is, how do you see the public comments coming in on that list that you've selected being integrated or changing the composition or rebalancing the composition?
It's a good question. We will be discussing this tonight.
Thank you.
Let me give you my personal instant reaction, and that was when we were setting this up, I thought that was going to be at sort of two levels. Unless there was something really wrong, unless we go really wrong, it's going to be taken as advice for the future. So we're going to make it a selection, publish the reasons, and that will become the team. The team gets published for public comment, but it wasn't my view that that public comment would change the composition of the selections. It would be a reaction for future learning and for other teams. But as I say, there has to be sort of a sanity check in there. If we've gone and appointed 8 IP lawyers from New Zealand as members of the team, who I think would make a wonderful team, personally, the community may come back and say, look, you've got that slight... we'd have to have a chance to respond if we've gone very wrong. But I don't see us having some kind of multiple process and team selection. Is that a help? That's my current thinking.
Can I just react to that?
Please do.
Thank you. My sense is nobody in my community understood that that was the case. We weren't sure what the case was, how it would be responded to. Perhaps that's part of the learning process, but I think it's important that if there is public comment, that the community be given an opportunity to have some impact. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Bertrand de la Chapelle. I'm the French GAC representative. First of all, on the criteria, in the affirmation of commitment, in this paragraph 9.1, there are those 5 sub-bullets. But I would just like to call once again the attention of you and the team in the future to the 3 words that are in the end, which is transparency, accountability, and public interest. These are words that are hardly quantifiable, but they are very important element that have been going on in the DNA of ICANN since the very early days, and basically the assessment is not on what has been done in the last 3 months. It's basically how ICANN is performing in regards to those 3 criteria. The second point is that when I hear the word matrix, and I've already said that often, there's a great importance of attaching an equal balance to qualitative and quantitative assessment. Transparency is not just about the number of documents that are being posted and so on. I think the evaluation and the perception in the community of whether ICANN is fully or as much as it could transparent, accountable, and in the public interest is the main thrust of the review. Next is, it is very important that the process incorporates not only external input in writing, but also opportunities for physical interaction, physical hearings, ideally in different regions, on this review panel, or with this review panel listening to comments. Because otherwise we will get the same kind of public comment period where people will be saying things in parallel, and it will be synthesized just within the team. I think it's very important to have the equivalent of what the NTIA was doing when they were doing the reviews at the end of each memorandum of understanding, which is having formal hearings and ideally in different regions of the world. And finally, a question. In the AOC, there is a comment about this panel indicating the possibility of having external experts. At the moment, there is no external expert, I understand. I wanted to know if it is still possible to suggest, because on a very concrete basis, I've been in contact with the woman who won the Nobel Prize for Economics in 2009, who unfortunately is not sufficiently available for that kind of thing, but who directed me to somebody she's been working with closely. Her name is Eleanor Ostrom, and she directed me to Charlotte Hess. And this person is very willing to consider participating in this, but the contact was made very recently, and I wanted to know if it is still time to potentially suggest.
The short answer is yes, there is time for that. My view was that the experts were going to be appointed separately from a call. The volunteers are a category. We're dealing mostly with the call for volunteers from the community. Independent experts is something that we haven't yet put our minds to. Please make that name available. That's an excellent suggestion. Thank you. Rob from the room.
One final comment from Eric Bruner-Williams. I know that the public comments, Steve's and mine, have been read, so I'm not repeating them now. I do, however, want to remind both Peter and Yannis that when the topic of public interest came up in the new format discussion at Paris, two very well-known members of the community attempted to define what each meant by public interest. This is not a point on which we can assume consensus.
I agree completely. And what I talk about is the balancing of the various elements of the public interest. There's a public interest to domainers and having the right to make as much profit as they can from the sale of domain names. There's the rights of free speech. There's all sorts of rights that are all in the public interest. And our job is trying to get a balance of that. And that balance will be quite different in relation to who is than it is for accountability and transparency, than it is for security and stability. So, Eric, I hear that, and I know that that is an interesting debate, and possibly that's a workshop topic, as was suggested earlier, that could be running in parallel. What it seems to me to be touching into is what is the mission of ICANN. The mission is to operate, to coordinate the infrastructural resources in the public interest. And, of course, that's key to our mission, to know what we're doing. Bill.
Just to generalize the point that Bertrand was making, in our response in the public comment period, the GNSO Council did ask whether it would be possible for us to put forward names for your consideration for the independent experts. So is that a generalizable thing? Bertrand has an idea. Can all the SOs and ACs put forward names for the independent experts?
Yes. I think what we need to do is address that once we've dealt with this issue and do a formal call for experts or a formal consideration. And we'll make up a process for that.
Okay.
I'd like to move off this. Bertrand, a last one on this. Then I'd like to see what people think about support. I'm very conscious, and Rod is very conscious, and Rod was originally slated to be part of this, but he's very keen to make it quite clear that staff will do what they're told, but want this to be a community process. So that the next question I'd like some feedback on is how should these review teams be staffed? Bertrand.
Just wanted to come back on the question of public interest, precisely because of the ambiguities around the term. This is why I think it's very important that the team discusses it. Just for information and almost for the record, I wanted to share with you one definition that I found, because I have no personal definition. And Walter Lippmann says, the public interest may be presumed to be what men would choose if they so clearly thought rationally, acted disinterestedly, and benevolently.
And I'm sure we'll reach those conditions just after the Titanic sails triumphantly into New York Harbour. Yeah. So can I come back to the question about staff support? Is this something that I'm being overly sensitive about? The obvious allegation once this review reports, if staff is doing a lot of the work, and I'm talking here about the substantive work, the report writing, the minute taking, the research that goes into it, or do we appoint an independent secretariat? And if we do that, do we need to sort of start building, because these reviews are ongoing, there's four, and then there's going to be every few years, do we need to somehow contract with an outside agency to become the independent review secretariat? And if we do, then how do we prevent ourselves from that becoming captured by an, you know? Help me with my paranoia, Marilyn.
Thank you, Peter. My name is Marilyn Cade. I'm the chair of the business constituency, but I am definitely speaking in my individual capacity because this is not a topic we have discussed yet, but I'll put it on the agenda for tomorrow. So I will speak in my personal capacity. I have a huge amount of respect for the work that the ICANN staff does and for all of the efforts that they make to be neutral and to be effective, and to hold themselves away from what I will call the employments of the community. I note that many people refer to this as lobbying, and I think that that's actually not the right term. I think the community seeks to share their views and their information, and that they think that they are able to add further understanding to the staff. We can use either ICANN staff today as long as they have time to do this, and I will note that I question that. Or we can pilot an approach for this review team, learn from that, and also be able to figure out how much time we have to allocate to this process in the ongoing and reoccurring review teams that come up. I will say that it's very possible that members of the community will feel themselves qualified to apply for a tender to do this. Should they do that, I would note that it should be a requirement that they not take on other contracts and that they not participate in other applications for registry or other services and hold themselves out merely as an independent and therefore a support processor who could be trusted. But I'll make one other point. You've indicated to us, I believe, and I'll just re-verify that, that there's going to be as much transparency as possible about this process. I think that's going to help a great deal.
Thank you, Marilyn. I think you've raised an interesting question, which is the declarations and the conflict of interest procedure that's going to go around the staff for this as well, if we go that way. Yanis? Anything more online? Any other questions? We're close to the end of our time. If there's no other questions, comments, we will say thank you, close the session, and begin the fun work of making the selections and hoping to avoid that punch-up that the chairman of the GAC has has raised as a possible outcome. Of course, we won't come to that. We're going to get started on it this afternoon. Thank you all very much.